Disturbing Interest is a Horrible Histories, Terrible Mysteries podcast. The past, and sometimes the present, are often a bleak place. Listener discretion is advised.
If you're a fan of Disturbing Interests, please like and subscribe. And for the love of God, tell a friend about us. Pretend you're a Mormon. Go door to door with the good news of Disturbing Interests. Preach our gospel, brothers and sisters, and non-gender binaried siblings, to the world at large. Because remember, with us, you might be disturbed.
But you're not alone. Welcome back to Disturbing Interest, everyone. I am Regina King. Your evilest bitch. And sitting in her own lovely house is my ever-beautiful partner.
Hi, I'm Lynn, your docent of darkness.
How you doing?
You know, I'm trying to get ready to go to Pennsylvania, and I feel like I'm trying to cram 10 pounds of life into a 5-pound bag. So, you know, it's fine. It's good. It's fine. And yourself?
Well, I'm very fuzzy at the minute for anyone who tunes in to see our lovely faces now on the YouTube, since we are now putting our lovely faces up on the YouTube or the interwebs, because, you know, that's what I'm just leaning into there. Anyway, but I'm very fuzzy, and this is, I want to say, reminiscent of life at the moment for
just
me.
Just a you blur. See how it,
yeah, a blur, slightly out of focus. Like, yeah, yeah.
Fair.
Yeah, yeah. This Fair. Is life. Yeah. How's everything going with your trip to the good old Commonwealth
PA.
Of PA?
The arc of totality. That's what I'm starting to refer to Lake Erie as. It's in the arc of totality. It's going well. We have a whole bunch of the glasses that you're supposed to have, because when I talked to Barry last about it, he was like, "Well, I remember you can poke a hole in a toilet roll and just like stare up." I was like, "Sir, no, we're gonna get you some actual glasses because we're not poking holes in toilet rolls, girl." Oh God, Dad, no. Like, I know Barry likes to save a buck, but like, no. So we'll order a bunch of eclipse glasses so we can make sure that Barry does not stare directly into the sun. So that'll be something.
This is amazing.
And who knows if we'll even get there, because we'll be on a Boeing plane. So that I'm so excited for that. I'm wondering if like I should just go into the plane wearing a parachute, because who knows at this point, you know?
I'm so uncomfortable for you.
Oh, I mean, hey, I'm super psyched. It's like all the things that I'm terrified of, just in a big, wonderful, like delicious melange, if you will, a tossed salad of anxiety. I'm super. I love it. I love this for me. But we're gonna go do this, because Will is like, we have to see the eclipse, and I'm like, okay. So we're gonna go stare at the eclipse, I guess, not directly and not through a toilet roll, but we are gonna look at it.
I think I would have been a bad ancient person. Like, there was a lot of focus on space and planetary movements and like what was going on up in the sky. And I'm over here just kind of like, okay, well, that's interesting. And it is. It's very interesting. I will read things. I will listen to things. I will watch things that have to do with space. But are you seeing this cattail that is just randomly bobbing up and down here?
It's like, na 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 na.
Neko,
Neko, Neko, Neko, Neko, Neko.
Yep, that's what's going on over here. But I'm not like solely focused on planetary and solar stuff. It just, it's fascinating. It's super interesting. But I mean, there's a lot of weird shit on Earth that catches my attention. Like, platypi.
Yeah, I'm more of a micro focus than a macro focus person for myself. I'm like, I'm more biology than astronomy. So a lot of botany. I'm into botany.
Yeah.
Planted some rhubarb.
I wish I was into botany, but yeah, plants don't like me. My very essence kills them. And you know what? I accept that. I have people like that in my life. Their very essence just makes me want to curl up and die.
Like the other guy that's running for president? Honestly, both guys that are running for president. present. One of them I'm mostly just like, oh, that guy again. And the other one I'm like, no. But yeah, that other guy kind of, yeah.
I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm done with it all. I'm fucking done with it all. You know, at this point, we could put a hyped up pigeon in the White House. And I think it may be passable.
What about a ghost mongoose? Would you like that in the White House? Because that's a possibility.
I think I just want to hear more about a ghost mongoose.
A ghost
Are
mongoose?
You telling us about a ghostly mongoose
am.
Today?
I
well,
am.
First, before we get into that ghostly mongoose, what are you drinking?
So because my story, in fact, I'm not just... This is like the all weasel episode. I'm very pleased with myself, but they're all weasel-like substances of the United Kingdom.
All so, weasels all the all, time.
Yes, we switched to an all weasel podcast. This is Disturbing Weasels. so
I really, really need you to do the weasel song. The pop goes the weasel
oh, God.
Song.
Yeah, so... this isn't British. This is, I believe it's from Portugal because oh. It's chip, which is like a kind of port situation, but it had tonic in it and nothing to me says the British Isles like a good G&T. So I have this, plus it's got a real fancy, like pretty fancy.
It is very lovely.
It's called Taylor Fladgate, which seems very British. I don't know. I just wanted a gin and tonic. God damn it. I wanted a gin and tonic.
I support this.
And I'm trying to get in there. It's trying to thwart me. It's like, no, you will not get into the can. All right, come on. Come on,
It's like you get your LaCroix.
Ooh, it's foamy. It's trying to foam. It's trying to escape. Drink escape. Okay, I'm going to try this. It smells like wine-ish. It's got a winey smell. It's not nothing alarming. That is to, you know what, to quote Aesop Rock, now that is a powerful cat. That is a fascinating. That is fascinating. That is real weird. I mean, not bad weird, but weird, because it's tonic water and like sherry. It is like sherry, basically like a sherry, like a dry sherry and tonic water. And that is a lot of dry. Like, I this has sucked all the moisture out of... My mouth is Arrakis. My mouth could produce spice. There are sandworms under my tongue. The Kwisatz Haderach coming out of my mouth. Yeah, that's what's happening right now with this. It's good, but it's very... I'm glad there's only this much of it, you know?
Aren't you glad you have another beverage to wet your whistle sitting next to you?
Oh, I have the worst flavor of LaCroix. So I'm trying lime... This shit tastes like engine degreaser, I think, would taste. This tastes like how Windex smells. This is bad, but it's what I had, and it's wet, so I'm going to double fist weird shit tonight, so which is good, because I'm going to be double fisting weird stories for you tonight, so it's perfect. Worked
nice.
Out perfectly.
Nice. I'm here for it. I am not drinking anything weird. However, I did have two glasses of wine this week in the same night. I know I am so crazy and wild.
Swinging from the chandelier.
I was freaking lit. Like, I don't drink. I
you
don't
don't
drink
know
anymore.
Me.
Yeah, yeah. I went to bed. And I did not move until my alarm clock went off. Like, I had friends over for dinner and served wine with dinner. Had myself two glasses near the end because I was like, it's been a hard week and baby needs a treat. And so I had myself two glasses of wine. Big glasses of wine, may I add. And yeah, took those down like they were grape juice. And then I went and I laid down and I snoozled myself asleep and stayed dead to the fucking world until my alarm went off. And when my alarm went off, I I woke up like that chihuahua in the van, you know, the gif where the person is taking the video of the other dog that's all cute and happy, and then that just really messed up chihuahua kind of rises up from the dead. That was me. I rose up like that from the dead, looked around and went, where the fuck am I right now?
So basically you were just reenacting the Easter story.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Drank the Jesus juice and then died, and on the third day rose from the dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Resurrected right then and there. It was glorious. It truly was. I sat up and I went, who the fuck am I? Where the fuck am I? What the fuck time is it? Oh my God, I need to pee. And then I looked in the mirror and went, how is my hair doing that? Like, gravity is a thing, right? So this is why one of the many, many reasons, and one of the lowest on the list of why Reg does not drink.
That's highly reasonable. Well, I do, for you guys, I will be drinking these. So as I have previously said, when they're terrible, I will sip them, I will taste them, but I am under no contractual obligation to finish a can. I think this might actually be one that I could slowly consume over the course. So we'll see how it goes. We might be like real goofy by the end of this episode. I don't know.
You might. I'm just saying, guys, if you want to put her under contractual obligation,
no,
then you too can become a patron with the rest of our patrons and pay us for our nonsense. We appreciate the patronage. It makes me feel like I'm like in Medici aged Rome, you know, like the Medici are just funding my bullshit. So if you want to be like the Medici and maybe hold Lynn to a contract where she has to
that's a big pledge, because my liver, man, I don't know.
You do drink some shit, man.
I taste some shit. I don't drink the whole thing. I get like two sips. Just I always try to do a second one, even if the first one is ungodly. Like, maybe I'll grow on me. Nope, it doesn't. It never does. But I always like to give it like the benefit of the doubt. But this is actually, I would say, yeah, this is an interesting, if you like weird, bitter, like tonic watery kind of vibe, this is not a bad drink. This is not terrible.
I like it when you accidentally forget and you take a drink and I'm watching you when you take the drink and you're just like, oh God.
Well, because I'm like, oh, my mouth's dry. I should grab. Oh no, I'm sorry I did that. Because I always have the backup. I have the LaCroix, which is what I really do drink throughout the episode. And sometimes I'll grab the wrong thing and be like, oh God, because I have a small desk. So there's not, you know, I need like the really bad ones. I need to be like, excuse me, and go put it across the room so I can't accidentally imbibe it.
Meanwhile, my desk is large and wacky, and Mr. Meow, my amazing spouse, just got this insane monitor that is like three monitors combined, and it's one of those curved ones, and I feel
the Jumbotron.
Yeah, I kind of feel like I'm sitting at a starship right now with the soundboard next to me. And like,
are you doing like Minority Report things where you're like whooshing your hands around, like you're doing Tai Chi?
Yeah. If you just see me like, wait, is this a touch screen? If it is, it's not set up to be. I'm over here like, I'm going to touch the monitor. Meanwhile, I hear Mr. Meow silently crying like,
don't
upstairs.
Poke it. Yeah. Don't poke it.
He's like, what are you doing? All right. Well, tell us about the weasels of Wall Street. Weasels of Wacky Land.
No, that's just a depressing story. No, these are the, I'm calling this UK Weasels Two Ways.
Weasels Two Ways?
Weasels Two Ways.
Weasels Two Ways. All weasels, all the time.
Two weasels, two furious. Weasels. Yeah, this is, and they're both weasels of the UK. Because we do love an animal episode of Animals Gone Wild. So I thought it would be good to start my portion of the season with that.
Hey, we're on brand with season six, man. Terrible horribleness with me. Wonderful wacky animals with you. My cat being a total asshole and walking across the desk and shaking everything.
Yep.
So now our lovely viewers who want to see us can see Neko Tail sharking across, shaking the thing, getting right in front of me. Good times, good times. On brand.
Well, unfortunately, I feel like because we now have the video aspect, I should come up with like, I should have brought a sock puppet, like made a weasel sock puppet. So, you know, I might try that throughout here. Oh, there you go.
I have a sock puppet. It's a cat, but you know what? It's kind of fuzzy. It's a weasel. It's actually a monitor duster.
Oh.
Clearly, we like taking care of our electronics too.
Well, the good thing is, the first one I'm going to talk about is an invisible weasel.
Ooh.
Can't see it. Ooh, invisi-weasel.
Ooh.
Yeah, no, this is, these stories are exceptionally stupid, even for our standards. So I'm very pleased with this. I'm quite pleased. But also, again, because I do enjoy living a lie, technically the first one I'm going to talk to you about is not really a weasel. It's a weasel-shaped creature. It is a mongoose.
Lies!
Yeah. So I understand. For all the pedants out there going, mongoose isn't actually a weasel. It's not family Mustelidae. It's a completely different species. I know this, but I just like to say weasel for the comedy. Weasel.
What exactly makes a weasel and a mongoose? Are you going to go into that? Because I really now need to know. Oh, do you not know?
Let me also stress that there is not even a real weasel or a real mongoose in the first story. There is a ghostly earthbound spirit that is probably, maybe, definitely a hoax. So not really a mongoose so much as the product of too much time on the hands of a really bored family living on a really tiny island in the days before like Netflix and video games. So yeah, that's what I actually have.
I think a lot of our modern tales of mystery come from that exact setup.
A lack of Netflix. Pretty much.
A lack of Netflix. Yeah.
So, well, and let me start it off before I forget. My sources were Wikipedia. I started with that. Atlas Obscura. weirdhistorian.com and Island Living, the Isle of Man, and the movie with Simon Pegg in it. So yeah, I really pulled out all the archival research stops for this one. Really stellarly, scholarly research tale right here. Like, yeah, that is me. I'm like a PhD candidate in ghost weasels.
Wait. So now we have the doctor of aswangology,
yes,
and the PhD of
in
weasels.
Ghost weaselry.
Ghost weaselry.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay.
A legitimate thing. I'm sure you can get student loans for that, to cover that.
PhD in ghost
weaselry. Weaselology.
Weaselology. Oh, yes. I like that. How about specter weaselology?
Spectral weasels.
Spectral weasel PhD.
God. Okay. So my first of my two weasel stories, I will introduce you to, gentle listeners, is a fascinating creature named Jeff. G-E-F, or maybe like it's like with Jif, it could be Geff. But it is Jeff. It is Jeff. And Jeff is, well, Jeff is a mongoose.
Like,
but not really a mongoose. Like not an actual
Jeff? Like the curtain in my house of Jeff Goldblum? Like,
no, it's not
Jeff?
That Jeff, because that's Jeff's with two F's and a J.
This is true.
Jeff with a G E F.
Geff.
It looks like Geff, but it's Jeff. It's Jeff. I don't know.
Okay.
And again, he is not actually a terrestrial living, skittering live mongoose chasing snakes and whatever Ricky Tikki Tavi situation, right? But rather, he is the earthbound spirit of a mongoose that has been trapped in an old farmhouse thousands of miles away from India, where he comes from. Look, it's complicated. So let me just, I'll tell you the
story. I imagine spectral weasels would be complicated. That's why they require a PhD.
Yeah, no, this is a complex story. So picture it. The Isle of Man, 1931. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with the Isle of Man, thinking that maybe that's the cool name for a gay bathhouse, right? It unfortunately is not. It is a wee tiny little island in the Irish Sea, nestled between Great Britain and Ireland. And it has an area of about 221 square miles, or 572 square kilometers, for everyone not living in this backwards-ass non-metric country. I mean, this is a small place. It is 32 miles, or 52 kilometers long, and its widest point, 14 miles, or 22 kilometers wide. And being this kind of itty-bitty little place, it also has a fairly small human population that is around 80,000 currently. And its current claims to fame seem to be that it is a great tax haven for businesses. It produces very cute little tailless cats. Mr. Jones was a Manx, so, mm-hmm. You know, that is my main love of the Isle of Man is for that. It is home to an absolutely bonkers motorcycle race around the island, which might also account for why all the cats are tailless. And it is the birthplace of the Bee Gees, which, you know, that's cool.
I enjoyed the Bee Gees. I think that is probably surprising news to many people who have listened to me for 5 years, going on 6 years now. Yeah, I enjoyed the Bee Gees.
Yeah.
It guilty pleasure? Maybe. Don't judge me.
I'm every weasel to you. Anyway, that was my Bee Gees impression. Sorry, Barry and Andy.
Watching the younger generation see the Bee Gees for the first time is freaking hilarious. Have you seen any of those videos?
No, I mean, there was a lot of really skin-tight satin happening in... And the mullets and the beards and the silky hair. The 70s, they were a special time for fashion.
Apparently, it's a common misconception that the Bee Gees were African American in this generation. Oh. And so watching people watch the Bee Gees for the first time, so funny.
They were extremely white people from very, very extremely white tiny island in the Irish Sea. Oh, yeah. No. But the other claim to fame that the Isle of Man had for a brief time in the year of our Lord, 1931, was that it was home to a supernatural being that had all of the UK a Twitter for a period of several years, because apparently that was a slow news decade, I guess. Again, days before the internet and Netflix. So our story begins in a farmhouse called Dorlish Cashin, near the hamlet of Dalby on the western coast of the Isle of Man. Extremely picturesque, bucolic, green fields. That's kind of thing. Picture that.
Yeah. Green. Lots of green.
Yes. And James and Margaret Irving had moved from the mainland to the picturesque old pile in 1971, and they were soon joined by their baby daughter, Vuairi. And the family lived peacefully in the farmhouse until September of 1931, when young Vuairi was 13 years old. And they began to hear strange scratching and rustling noises in the walls, which, okay, old farmhouse in the country, that's not so weird, right? It's probably mice, rats, squirrels,
something like
that, right?
Yeah.
But then they started to hear weird vocal noises that sounded at first like growling coming from the attic walls. And when the Irvings went upstairs to investigate, like white dumbasses are gonna do, the growling noises soon turned into what the father, James, referred to as gurgling sounds, like a baby trying to learn to speak.
I go with some kind of rodent, maybe a cat.
No, baby trying to learn to speak. So fascinated by this gurgling, growling, whatnot, James said that the family decided to try teaching this growling, gurgling, sputtering, invisible entity living inside their walls to speak English. Now, I don't know about you, but if I heard something growling and gurgling in my walls, I would first call the damn Orkin man. And if that failed, I would get on the horn to, like, I don't know, the Vatican and be all, I'm going to need an old priest and a young priest. I would Amityville the hell out of that house so fast. I would buy the local Tesco out of every last goddamn bit of their salt and sage and just smudge the crap out of that house. Every last scrap of cold iron in a 10-mile radius would be covering my domicile. I have seen too many horror movies and terrible, like, ghost hunter stories on the Discovery Channel that this is a hell no. This is no, no, no. But apparently not for the Irving family. They were open-minded. They were like, hey, Attic Beelzebub, let's get Duolingo on the case and teach you English.
So I have lived in a haunted house, as we know. As we all know, if you listen to season one, if you've been with us that long.
But was it a ghost mongoose? Was it?
It did bang on the walls, and we did have squirrels that went into a wall, not the walls that the ghost was banging on. Anyway, that's different. But I'll tell you what, I never...
You didn't get out Rosetta Stone and be like, let's learn English.
I never said, wall entity. Hey, wall entity who keeps on stealing my pots and pans, let's learn English. That way you can communicate with me better. No, you know, I think it was good. It screamed enough on its own and did enough of its own stuff. I think we are good on that.
You didn't go full, like, LeVar Burton reading Rainbow with this guy? You didn't Sesame Street teach it things? See, that's apparently where you went wrong.
That's where I went wrong.
Yeah, that's
where
you went
wrong. Well, if it had been a mongoose, maybe I woulda.
Well, James Irving later recounted Jeff as saying, for years I could understand all that was said. I tried to talk, but I couldn't until you taught me. Which, okay. Yeah, again, you're going to have questions and I have zero answers because this is goofy. This is some goofy shit.
That's not how it works.
No, but apparently, I don't know.
Not so, like Jeff, I know how ghost mongooses work. I don't have that PhD.
Look, I'm still working on my dissertation, okay? I haven't got it all down yet. So Jeff, now being able to communicate with the Irving family, told them that he was the ghost of a mongoose that had been born in Delhi, India on Monday, June 7th, 1852, which... Damn, I had no idea that mongooses had such a human-like grasp on time, geography, and calendars.
And geography. And,
yeah. But I guess Delhi. So.
Sure.
Sure. Go Jeff. Jeff then proceeded to tell the family that, quote, I shall haunt you with weird noises and clanking chains, because I got nothing.
Where'd he get the chains? Why does a mongoose have chains? Was he a mongoose under distress?
He probably has chains because he needs to get over the mountains in the winter, right?
Or because he lived a brutal life and they're the chains weighing down his mortal soul?
I don't know.
He didn't have three ghosts visit him in his life and make him turn around. Maybe he was Ebenezer the Jeff mongoose.
Mongoose theology, it's tricky. It's a tricky thing.
Again, we just need to get through our PhD in weasology.
So he also apparently was going to torture the family with bad jokes, weird rhymes, and creepy peeping Tom observations about the clothing that Margaret Irving was removing as she was preparing to go to bed one evening. So basically they were living with like a shitty stand-up comedian mongoose ghost situation in their walls.
First off, I almost sprayed this brand new monitor with Crystal Light at that one because that was freaking hilarious. Second, maybe it was just a ghost fucking with them.
I don't know. Well,
if it, well, I mean,
look, I mean, whether you believe in the supernatural or not, the more I tell you the story, the more you're going to be like, Yeah, okay, sure.
So, you know me, I am a believer of the woo, and I'm I don't think so.
Yeah, no, not this story. Like, no. Seriously, even the most, like, gullible, like, ghost facers sort of person would be like, no, this is some shit.
Okay, Jeff.
Yeah, this is a stunt. So, the Irvings did claim to have occasionally glimpsed Jeff in corporeal form, describing him as a being of a yellowish tinge, like a ferret. The tail is long and bushy and tinged with brown. So apparently, he was Ghost Pikachu. Yeah. All they needed was a Pokeball, and they would have had no problem getting him out of the house.
I mean, that explains why he couldn't talk, but he could understand.
Pika, Pika! Jeffa, Jeffa! Yeah, so for the most part, they said that they almost never saw him, but they always did hear his voice coming from the walls, or when they would leave the house to walk around the countryside, Jeff would sometimes accompany them and hide behind hedgerows, talking to them from the bushes. I don't know. So, all of this would have just been a weird, eccentric little folie à deux, or tray, technically, shared by one bored and wacky family out in the Manx countryside, just, again, waiting for Netflix and the internet to be invented. Except that the story of Jeff got out to the local papers, and given that it was probably a real slow news day all day, every day on the Isle of Man, they ran with it.
Of course.
Other papers picked it up across the UK, and reporters started showing up at the farmhouse in the hopes of hearing a little bit of mongoose banter, or at least a few wall scratchings, maybe a growl or two. Now, how did word of this bizarre spectral mongoose get out of this tiny corner on this obscure little island? How did Jeff go viral in the days before Mark Zuckerberg's dad was even a twinkle in his grandpappy's eye? Well, James Irving wrote to several papers and to a number of psychic investigators and amateur ghost hunters, inviting them to come on over and see if they could have an audience with the alleged Spook of Dalby. And interestingly, when many of these investigators did come over to see him, Chatty Cathy Jeff suddenly went totally shtum and disappeared from the premises. Got a little stage fright. For instance,
you know, if he had just contacted the investigators or somebody who maybe was a clairvoyant or something like that to come out and figure out, you know, what the fuck was going on with this random mongoose, then maybe I could believe that at least he believed it was a thing.
Yeah,
but the fact that he called the press.
Yeah.
That right there. I'm just like, okay.
This is a bit of a suspect mongoose. A sus-goose.
A sus-goose.
So for instance, in July of 1935, the editor of the Listener magazine, Rex Lambert, persuaded his friend Harry Price, a paranormal investigator, to go to the Isle of Man to investigate the strange goings-on in this farmhouse. And in the course of their investigations, they had hair supposedly shed by Jeff, examined by a naturalist who pronounced it to be dog hair, probably from the family sheepdog Mona. And then footprints and tooth and claw marks that were allegedly made by Jeff in plasticine were also then sent to Reginald Pocock of the Natural History Museum in London for assessment. And he's an actual, like, scientist, right? And he concluded that they might have been made by a dog, but most definitely were not made by any kind of mongoose at all, corporeal or not.
See, this is why people get their PhD. In weasology.
Yes, in spectral weasology. Mm-hmm. So, you know, again, it's a special ghost mongoose, so who knows? Maybe he's like, I fooled you all by making claw marks that look like a dog. Gotcha. But yeah, I know. And so if this is also another question I have, if this is a spectral ghostly mongoose, how the hell is it shedding or leaving footprints and shit?
Like, that was going to be my next question. Yeah. Why would a ghost mongoose leave shedding hair behind? But again, I just need a PhD in spectral weasology and I will have the answers.
Right.
Or if you are a doctor in spectral weasology or aswangology. Either way, I'm still after a doctor in aswangology. Feel free.
I just know I'm in the weeds with Jeff here, like how this is working. So Price and Lambert also noted that the walls of the farmhouse were double layered with wooden paneling over the original stone walls, leaving quite a large gap between the two layers that essentially turned the entire house into a giant speaking tube with the walls acting like soundboards.
Oh my God. So you could,
for instance, growl or speak into the crack in the paneling in the dining room and very effectively have the sound carry the hoy across the house to a bedroom. Now, again, just apropos of nothing, probably, the teenage daughter of Wari had, as a hobby, learned some ventriloquism. Again, probably in no way related to anything about this story at all, but thought I'd put it out there.
Yeah.
Grab your marshmallows and sleeping bags for the Burnt Marshmallows podcast, where cozy mysteries come alive around the crackling campfire. Picture yourself wrapped in a warm blanket, sipping hot cocoa as we share spooky tales that will whisk you away to a world of mystery, ghosts, and perhaps even an occasional monster. Crime-solving spirits, urban legends, Bigfoot, we've got it all. Join Burnt Marshmallows every Tuesday, wherever you listen to podcasts, for cozy mysteries.
We are Castles and Cryptids, where the castles are haunted and the cryptids are cryptic as fuck.
We're a couple of Canadian chicks who are fascinated by freaky shit, so join us as we fall down numerous rabbit holes.
Numerous, so very many rabbit holes.
Fortune telling.
Yeah.
And this is episode 68.
What lurks
in the woods?
We're doing some axe crimes, axe murders, people hacked up.
Yeah. But yeah, we are doing high kill counts.
Yeah, the most killerist serial killers around.
Ah, the killiest of the killy. We are doing abandoned places. We talk true crime, cryptids, haunted AF stuff, and much, much more.
There are definitely some movie tangents in there too, because we love our horror movie chat.
Yes, we do. So feel free to follow us on social media at Castles and Cryptids, and don't forget to keep it cryptic, eh?
Yeah.
Sup, creeps, and welcome to Creepy Confidential. Is Mothman really a supernatural force predicting impending doom? Did Apollo 11 really land on the moon in 1969? Did you find out if that was a cult that was living just two doors down that you waved to every single day when you got your mail? If these are the things you ponder when you should be sleeping, then I would like to welcome you to Creepy Confidential. I'm your host, Noelle, your resident weirdo Wisconsinite. I open case files on my favorite cryptids, cults, conspiracies, and other worldly creepy with new cases, live broadcasts, and local lore. Some stories have been lost with time. Others are perhaps still happening today in your local communities, right up under your very creepy noses. So get ready, creeps. It's Creepy Confidential.
How do you think the world will end? Alien invasion? Nuclear disaster? Another more deadly pandemic? I'm Jackie Moranti, and I'm the host of Cause of Death, 100 Seconds to Midnight. I talk about the things that could obliterate mankind. I call it pre-apocalyptic nonfiction. The doomsday clock was set at 100 seconds to midnight from January of 2020 to January of 2023. On January 24th, 2023, the Board of Atomic Scientists moved the hands of the clock even closer to midnight. Now, it's set at 90 seconds to midnight, the closest it's ever been. From nuclear disaster to environmental threats to food and water crises, find out how mankind is destroying itself 1 second at a time. If you haven't listened to my podcast, you should.
So Price and Lambert actually did publish a slim book in 1936 called The Haunting of Cashin's Gap about their investigation. And though they were careful to remain pretty neutral and kind of journalistic in their findings, in the end, privately, they concluded that, quote, only the most credulous of individuals would be impressed with the evidence for Jeff. And then this is where things get even weirder. So Hungarian-born psychoanalyst and parapsychologist and dude with one of the coolest names ever, Nándor Fodor, learned of the case.
Nándor Fodor. I know of Nándor Fodor.
Nándor Fodor. Yes. He's sort of a well-known psychic investigator guy of this period, right? He'd be sort of like, call it up Peter Venkman, you know, yeah. Or the one of the ghost hunters dudes, right? To come
yeah,
to your house.
Yeah, he has and, come yeah. across in... I think research for our show before, if mm-hmm. I remember correctly. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, and so he heard about this and he decided to come out and investigate it himself to see how it tracked with his theories on poltergeist activity. And Nándor Fodor at that time was the London correspondent for the American Society for Psychical Research. And in his brief as an investigator for the society, he headed off to the Isle of Man to see what was up with Jeff. And once again, Jeff took a powder and failed to utterly deliver the goods. That pesky space mongoose once again peaced out when confronted with an actual investigator. So despite spending about a week there trying to coax the spectral tube kitten to speak with him, Fodor left the Isle with no actual evidence of any paranormal activity whatsoever having taken place in the farmhouse, which... you know, is probably actually okay by Mr. Fodor because, you see, quite controversially for the time, he held the theory that poltergeist activity was not actually caused by anything ghostly or spiritual per se, like a soul or, an incorporated soul out there knocking shit around, mm-hmm. but that it was rather the outward physical manifestation of a conflict inside the subconscious minds of somebody living in the supposedly haunted household.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's actually still a very common belief, is that it is a psychic or telekinetic energy that right. is manifesting
and that
externally.
Was,
yeah.
That was very much his... That was he was one of the first people to actually come up with this mm-hmm. concept of kind of marrying parapsychology and just psychology together. And, you know, as time went on, he got less into the Paris part of psychology and became more interested in just the general psychology of how people did things. And he did go on to explain that many supposedly occult type manifestations were in fact actually people's subconscious minds playing tricks on them. And he definitely did entertain the possibility that psychokinesis or the ability to move objects with your mind might be possible, which sure, Jan. But overall, his general opinion was that hauntings were less the product of unquiet spirits than they were of unquiet minds. And that was his opinion on the subject of Jeff. That basically what had started out as a way for the bored Irving family, who had led a much more exciting life when they were living in London before moving out to the back of beyond in the Isle of Man, that they were entertaining themselves with the story of Jeff. And that over time, the family all kind of came to vaguely believe in Jeff. You know, this was this story that they had made up that they just kind of, it became real to them. Mm. So upon Father James's death, communication with Jeff ceased. And in 1945, Margaret and Voiry sold the farmhouse, reportedly at a loss because of its reputation as being haunted by a mischievous talking mongoose. I mean, I don't know, for the right buyer, that is a feature, not a bug.
Yeah. Know? Yeah. Yeah. Clearly the marketing was not done right.
Right. And it wasn't in Seattle, because people would be like, oh, that's extra. I'm going to pay extra for that. I mean, shit, like, knowing what our real estate goes for here, I think people would put up with an entire army of, like, ghost raccoons if they had to, you know?
Fucking kidding me? They put up with an entire army of real raccoons.
Right? Hey, Scott Waterview!
Have I told you about the raccoon at my house? Have I told you about this raccoon? This is the biggest damn raccoon I have ever seen. Like, he's as big as this crazy ass new monitor, right? Like, he is so big that the first time I saw him, I was pulling into my garage, like, I went to turn, and I was like, the fuck is that? A wild
dog? Is that a coyote?
Yeah, I thought it was like a wild dog. And then I realized, oh no, that is
tanuki.
The king of the tanukis.
Yeah, it's sumo tanuki.
So then I, like, told Mr. Meow about it, and I looked, the light sensor was triggered in my backyard. I look in the backyard to see what triggered it, and no, he was not. He was on the other side of the fence. I just see these large, creepy hands walking, and I was like, is that a fuck? Oh, it's that raccoon. Because at first it was big enough. I was like, is that a dog on the other? Oh, nope. No. It's that raccoon. Then Mr. Meow and Rocky came face to face with him on a walk. And he stands up. And Rocky goes, oh,
I'm going to live to fight another day. Bye.
This is your street. He doesn't turn around and run away. He backs up without turning his back.
Oh, you don't turn your back on sumo raccoon. No.
No, no, no. He backs up, hides behind Meow, and is like, I'm ready to farm this one out. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I would be more afraid, honestly, of that than I would be ghost raccoon.
Yeah,
ghost
mongoose. If I'm living here with giant ass raccoon, you can bet your ass ghost mongoose would be just fine. Yeah,
that's fine. So yeah, so basically 1945, the surviving Irvings sell the farmhouse at a loss, and then in 1946 the buyer of the farm, Leslie Graham, informed the local press that he had shot and killed Jeff. Which, again, how do you do that if it's a ghost? But sure, Leslie. And he proudly displayed the body of some poor black and white creature to the media. And then Voiry Irving immediately called foul, saying that it was categorically not Jeff because it was too large and the wrong color. And again, I will remind you all, ghost mongoose. Ghost. Voiry herself passed in 2005, maintaining until the very end of her life that she had not made Jeff up and that he was a real, true spirit mongoose. Now, if you have a hankering to see more on this ridiculous-ass story, there was a film released last year titled Nandor Fodor and the Talking Mongoose, starring Simon Pegg as Nandor Fodor, and featuring the voice of Neil Gaiman as Jeff.
I am in for all of that.
Okay, so, like, it's a well-acted, very prettily shot movie that doesn't really, like this story, it doesn't really come to much. Because, again, Nandor Fodor did not encounter any actual Jeffs or mongoose or whatnot. I mean, I think it wants to be this, like, profound meditation on something, but it doesn't really come together. They absolutely waste Minnie Driver. A waste of Minnie Driver.
I hope she got paid. A waste of Simon Pegg, I'm guessing.
Waste of Simon Pegg. I mean, it's I don't know, like, it's weird. It means well, but, like, it's, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying don't see it, but, like, do not get your hopes up for it to be a wacky good time, because it is not that. It's fine. But yeah, if you just want a general, like, what's up with Jeff, you check it out. It's not terrible. But lest you think that's it for me banging on about the weasels of the British Isles, oh, I'm going to leave you with a short bonus story about let's call it a sport that should probably not exist, but it does exist. The thing that happens that should not be happening. And that sport of which I speak is ferret legging, also known as put 'em down and ferret down trousers, and it is pretty much as advertised. Basically,
I beg your finest pardon?
Yep, ferret legging. So basically, I'm not making this shit up either, guys. I'm not making it up. This is a thing. Basically, this is a test of your endurance, wherein you, the human participant, put live ferrets, at least one, possibly more, down your pants, down the pants, which you have tied securely around your ankles to prevent weasel escape. And the winner of this contest is the last person to cry uncle and release the animals from their fly. Yeah. So this activity has apparently been an endeavor that idiots have been doing for several centuries, and it may have originated during the time when only the wealthy landowners in Britain were permitted by law to keep ferrets for hunting, and so that the poachers who used illicit weasels were forced to hide their little floof snakes down their pants when confronted with gamekeepers. The sport would be played on and off in pubs and taverns because drunk people do really stupid shit, and this is culturally true across the globe. But ferret legging had a sudden resurgence in popularity in Yorkshire during the 1970s, among the miners.
Ladies and gentlemen, I just want to let you know that we had a fun technical snafu where Mr. Mao had accidentally logged into a Discord channel that he games in, and I apparently was just talking into the void, as we have a habit of doing. And one of his friends jumped in and was like, the fuck are you doing in here? Which, you know, bless them, because they got to hear all about weasel madness.
Hey, they got a preview. Who doesn't want to know about ghost weasels?
Mercy. That's great. That's awesome. Anyhow, please, yes. Continue. Oh, yeah.
So apparently ferret legging had a resurgence in popularity in the 70s in Yorkshire, when a group of miners there decided that it would be an enjoyable endeavor to do in their spare time. You know, for example, the world record for ferret legging stood at 40 seconds in 1972, but by 1977, thanks to ferret legging mania, Edward Simpkins from the Isle of Wight set the new world record of 5 hours and 10 minutes. Although, according to Wikipedia, he only had one ferret down his pants during the first 4 hours, and then two for the last 70 minutes. Apparently, Simpkins sustained two large bites during his record-breaking attempt, but he continued to play a game of darts undeterred during the ordeal. Look, I'm just going to, here's the thing. I'm just going to read you these absolutely golden paragraphs from Wikipedia, because honestly, I could not report better on this topic than whoever wrote this already has.
I know my face has had to be doing some things throughout this entire episode, but holy shit, guys, like, seriously, thank God for Netflix. Like, really.
And pickleball.
And pickleball.
And, like, knitting. Yeah.
Like, anything else other than, leave the animals alone is what I'm saying.
Keep the weasels out of your pants, you weirdos. But yeah, no.
Is that a weasel out of your pants, or you just happen to see me?
This is just, these, I mean, chef's kiss, mwah, for these. Retired miner Reg Mellor from Barnsley set the new world record time of 5 hours and 26 minutes on July 5th, 1981, at the annual penning show at Holmforth, Yorkshire. He had practiced the sport since his youth, but had received no recognition until he set the new world record.
Gee, I wonder why.
Mellor, who had hunted with ferrets in the dales outside Barnsley for many years, had grown accustomed to keeping them in his trousers to keep them warm and dry when out working in the rain. Mellor's trick was to ensure that the ferrets were well fed before they were inserted into his trousers. Yeah. You know, it gets better. In 1986, Mellor attempted to break his own record before a crowd of 2,500 spectators.
2,500 people showed up for
showed
that.
Up.
And we want to take TikTok away. See, this is what happens, people, when you have nothing to do.
Congress, keep TikTok. Think of the weasels. Think of the weasels. Yeah, so he had intended to beat the magic 6-hour mark, the 4-minute mile of ferret legging. After 5 hours, most of the attendees had become bored and left. Workmen arrived to dismantle the stage, despite Mellor's protests that he was on his way to a new record. According to Adrian Tame of the Sunday Herald Sun, Mellor retired after that experience, disillusioned and brokenhearted, but with his dignity and manhood intact.
No, Mellor, it was not.
Mellor had hoped to organize an annual national competition held in his hometown of Barnsley, and had offered a prize of £100 to anyone who could beat him. Frank Bartlett, a retired headmaster, and Christine Farnsworth broke Mellor's record in 2010. The pair managed 5 hours and 30 minutes, raising £1,000 for the Whittington Community First Responders.
Okay, follow-up question to that. Were they in the same pair of pants with the ferret?
I know, was it like a three-legged ferret-legging race? Like
what was
it like, was it like a tag team? They would share the trousers? I don't know.
They
would
share the ferret? Like,
I don't know.
Were they sewn together? I have so many. Were they Siamese twins?
Maybe. Was this, oh my God, this was like the ferret centipede. There you go. Ferret centipede.
You know how I always say, you know, you do you, as long as you don't hurt anyone and there's consent involved. Animals cannot consent.
Well, okay.
Weasels cannot consent. Do not stick a weasel in your pants.
Yeah. So if you want to read an absolute banger of a roll on the floor, hilarious article about ferret legging, you must check out the February 1983 issue of Outside Magazine and the article written by Don Katz about the endeavor. It is available on the internet for free, and you will definitely not want to be drinking any beverages, LaCroix, weird tonic water bullshit, when you read it, because you will shoot that liquid right out of your nose. It is funny as shit. So Don Katz, Outside Magazine, ferret legging, just Google it. It's beautiful. Once again, mercifully for both the humans and the ferrets, ferret legging appears to be kind of a dying sport, certainly on the decline. I blame pickleball. But there are still practitioners of the art form, both in the UK and on the fair shores of North America, including in beautiful scenic Winnipeg, where a benefit competition was held to raise money for the Manitoba Ferret Association shelter for homeless ferrets. And I will leave those of you who are concerned for the welfare of these mustelid gladiators, because I mean, I don't know about you, I would not like to be shoved down the pants of a burly idiot for sport.
No!
With these reassuring words from the Wikipedia article, again, Marlene Blackburn, who works with the Ferret Rescue League to ensure that no ferrets are harmed in the sport, claims that during the years the competitions have been held in Richmond, no contestant has ever been bitten, though some may get a few scratches. According to Kelly Yeager of the Manitoba Ferret Association, the animals actually like small confined spaces. Jay Lugar, the spokesman for the Richmond Highland Games and Celtic Festival, said, "Ferrets are generally very harmless, fun-loving creatures." Reg Mellor, however, commented that at their very worst, they can be cannibals, things that live only to kill, that'll eat your eyes out to get at your brain. And that, my dear listeners, concludes my sordid, pointy, furry, growling tale of pants weasels.
There is nothing in everything that I just heard this evening that makes me believe that that is a sport.
It's a thing.
You know what? That's like saying shoving 50 people into a telephone booth is a sport. That's like saying, hey, let's see how long we can stick nails under our fingernails and whoever lasts, that's a sport. That's like saying, let me see how many goldfish I can shove up my ass and turning that into a sport.
Yeah.
Like, no, honey, that is a fucking hobby and you have way too much time. You cannot call sticking a ferret down your pants as art unless it's performance art.
Is some performance art. Yes.
That I will agree
I have,
with.
You know, like I will, for instance, put my rats into their little space pod backpack and we'll go to the farmer's market, but I do not put them down my pants. Like they will sometimes go up my sleeve, but I don't invite that. That's a thing they choose.
Yeah.
I keep my rats out of my pants.
Yeah. Keep the rats out of your pants. Keep the ferrets out of your pants. Keep the weasels out of your. Hey, you know what? Let's just keep animals out of our pants, please.
Yeah, that's those are both two actual things that actually happened in the British Isles. Actual things.
Wow. Well, thank you for that. I'm scarred.
You're welcome.
I'm so scarred. So scarred. Not your fault. You're not
gonna go adopt some weasels now.
Kind of wanna just to keep them out of people's pants. Like, think of the weasels. Think of the weasels.
You think that's on the questionnaire when you go like down to the Humane Society to adopt a ferret? Will you now consider putting this weasel down your trousers? If the answer is yes, they're like, out, get out. No.
GTFO.
Yeah.
There's
your cat. There's a tail. I think that was Jeff.
Donut. Cattail. Anyway. So we have a new segment. You want to tell us about it? You want
it's
to
called...
do that fun little song you did earlier? Because was amazing.
So we've been out with Lynn and Regina. Yeah, we're weebing out, we're being weebs for anime because we love anime so freaking much. Oh my god, I love anime. Yeah, we love anime. It's a what anime are you watching now? And it'll be a semi-regular thing as we come up with new anime that we are obsessed with.
And comics and manhwa and manga are also going to be in that list. Pretty much anything that is like not real people.
Oh, no. Yeah. Senshi's real. He's real and he wants to help me cook all the dungeon animals. Yes, he does.
That's right. So what are you bringing us for Weeping Out?
Well, my two current obsessions are Delicious in Dungeon Meshi. Every Thursday on the Netflix, a new episode drops and it is freaking delightful. It is super great. If you've ever thought to yourself, I wonder what a gelatinous cube would taste like. Are mimics delicious? You will know. You will find out. When you watch Dungeon Meshi, it is delightful and I highly recommend it. And then my other one that I am obsessed with and very excited that there will be a second season is The Apothecary Diaries.
I can't wait to watch that one.
It's so good. It's the story. It's set in the Tang Dynasty in China. And it is the story of a young, like, I think she's like 17, like late teens, kind of apprentice apothecary who works in a very fancy brothel and who ends up getting kind of kidnapped and pressed into service at the palace.
As you do.
And then she kind of, she comes to the awareness of the prettiest man in China.
Oh.
Yes. Beautiful Jin Shi, who is a eunuch at the court and who discovers that she is very clever and is very good at solving mysteries, and they basically kind of team up to, well, she doesn't really want to team up, but that she's kind of stuck doing it, to kind of solve all these kind of court intrigues and murders and like weird goings on. And it is delightful. She is just a grumpy, spicy little meatball who is obsessed with poisons and alcohol. And I was like, I love you. Yes. But yeah, she's delightful. And I cannot speak highly enough of The Apothecary Diaries. You should definitely check it out.
Nice. Well, I'm looking forward to watching that one. I really am. That's exciting for me.
It's hella fun.
Yep. I am bringing us Frieren.
Oh my God. That one. Oh, feels all the sad feels and the human feels and
all the feels.
If you are a pet rat owner, because you get 2.5, 3 tops if you're real lucky years with the people, the rodents that you love, you're like, oh my God, I'm an elf. It's poignant. That fucker is poignant.
Yeah, it is. So with Frieren, the backstory on it is it's about this elf mage named Frieren, and she is coming to terms with the relationship that she had with this group of heroes that she saved the world with, and she's the only one left. She's seen them all die, and she's going on a journey to the afterlife with her apprentice and other heroes that she has formed this group with. And throughout the entire thing, you're seeing her memories and you're seeing how they have affected her, because she's really learning kind of how to feel and this emotion. And it is very much all about the feels, and it's a beautiful anime. It's so good. I highly, highly recommend it. Frieren, so good. And then the second recommendation I'm going to make is actually a manga, and it is called I'll Be the Queen in This Life. And it's like putting out like Portuguese nobility, like way back in the day, like when I did the episode on the corpse queen, like that kind of like Portuguese nobility and intrigue. And it has sorcery, and this woman goes back in time.
We stan a historical pastiche. Yes,
oh,
we do.
Yeah, we do. The entire time I'm reading it, like, it's so salty and saucy and sorcery, and she goes back in time, and just salty, saucy, and sorcery. I want that as my live, laugh, love. Yes, salty, saucy, sorcery. Anyway, but she goes back in time after being pretty much betrayed and killed in her previous life to get vengeance. And basically the vengeance she wants is fairness, balance, people not to be ginormous dicks most of the time. And you know what? I can get behind that. I can get behind going back in time, enacting a curse just for fucking karma to play out, right? So, yeah.
The long game.
Anyway, I have been enjoying it. It's a romance fantasy, but it also, like, the entire time I read it, it's beautiful art, but every time I read it, I think to myself, wow, I feel like I'm, like, really picking up on the like Portuguese nobility vibes, like in a certain era. So yeah, a lot of fun.
Nice.
So moving into do something, do something, because you know that's what we do. Again, we are still supporting Short Creek Dream Center. I highly encourage you all to go out and check out the shortcreekdreamcenter.org. And if you really want to reach out to them, contact them. They do have a contact us section on their webpage, but you can also email them at info@shortcreekdreamcenter.org. And the story behind Short Creek Dream Center is one of the ex-wives to the former leader of the FLDS got the house in the long run, the giant house that they lived in, and opened up this center to help people who were leaving the cult and had nothing, because any of you who have been listening to us long enough have heard about the FLDS here. But it was opened up to help those survivors of the cult rebuild their lives. I mean, a lot of the times they're women fleeing or getting kicked out, young men getting kicked out, and they have nothing. They have no education. They have no money. All of it was geared towards the cult. All their property is owned by the cult. Their education was not even a consideration a lot of the time. And for the women, sometimes they come out of there with like 5 to 10 kids and they're single parents and they're still very young and they have no education and no real knowledge of how the world works because they've been in an isolated situation where they have been abused and brainwashed their entire lives. So they need help. They always need help. And we want to help people get out of a bad situation. So I'm encouraging you all to go to the Short Creek Dream Center website, check it out, ask them for information if you want additional information, but there's got to be something if you want to help that you can do, whether that's just spreading the word like we are right now, whether that's volunteering some time or volunteering some cash, whatever you want to do, I'm sure they will welcome it. And that's do something. So I don't know, what's the takeaway today? What is the moral of the story?
I don't know. I think it's more don't put actual ferrets down your pants. And if you must do a ferret related weird thing with your life, sure, make up a ghost ferret that lives in your wall. That seems fine. Fake ferrets in the wall, yes. Real ferrets down your pants, no. I think that is what I've learned today.
Learned today as well. So on that note, remember, take care of each other. And you might be disturbed, but
you hopefully don't have weasels down your trousers. Nor are you alone.
Thanks for listening, friends. Please remember to like, subscribe, and tell a friend. And check us out on social media. On Facebook, we are the Disturbing Interests Podcast. Twitter, podcast_DI. Instagram, DI Podcast. Or if you really want to send us something, you can send it to our P.O. Box at 70515 Seattle, Washington, 98127.